The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Kamala!
Hi!
Hey there!
Aw, hi, you're both together. Oh, it's good to hear you both.
I can't have this phone call without saying to my girl Kamala, I am proud of you. This is going to be historic.
We called to say Michelle and I couldn't be prouder to endorse you and to do everything we can to get you through this election and into the Oval Office.
Oh my goodness. Michelle, Barack, this means so much to me. I am looking forward to doing this with the two of you, Doug and I both, and getting out there, being on the road. But most of all, I just want to tell you the words you have spoken and the friendship that you have given over all these years mean more than I can express. So thank you both. It means so much. And we're going to have some fun with this too, aren't we?
But I'll tell you, I've been watching your coverage sitting in the green room, and I just want to say something because I know Kamala like few do. So let me just say this clear. It's about to get real.
She's mainstream America. She's the hope. She's the opportunity. She's the American dream. And this guy wants to take us back. So it's mainstream, I think, versus extreme, them. I just think we are in a very good position.
It's remarkable. We're in uncharted waters because I've never seen anything like this. And it happened so quickly. I was texting with two members of Congress 2 days ago, and they felt the same way. It's like we were hoping for the best, but this was beyond what we thought, how quickly the party coalesced and rallied around her. But also, look, when you look at the level of energy and sort of the stuff that's happening on social media organically, right, at the grassroots, Michael, I haven't seen anything like this. I'm going to say it. I'm going to get in trouble. But I haven't seen anything like this since 08.
Okay, so I'm glad he went there. I'm glad he went there. And I'll tell you why I'm glad he went there. Because I said, and I've been saying since this whole thing started, this could be bigger than 08. And there are this. I'm sorry, you know, well, that ain't my issue.
So we move on from Joe-bama to Kabama. Bigger than 08, says this last guy there. Wow, I mean, the dear leader's not going to like that. Kamala Harris, more popular than Barack Hussein Obama. That's the steady diet of propaganda we've been receiving these past 5 days. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. We're back into the friendly confines of our headquarters studio here in Edmond, Oklahoma. Had a great 3-day camp out, as some of you might have seen on this show, as we filmed all of our segments outdoors the last three programs. If you haven't seen that, just go to our websites. Or our website, trumpet.com, sorry, the trumpetdaily.com. I'm a little disoriented getting back into the swing of things here at the headquarters campus. Also, the Rumble channel. That's what I meant to say. Rumble.com/trumpetdaily. You can see any of those past programs as we play them live every weekday morning at 11:05 a.m. in the Central Time Zone. But they're also posted after the fact if you'd like to watch later on demand. I love in the cold open there, the ones commenting about, I think it was Cory Booker who said, it's about to get real. It's so real. Another one said, it's so organic. I mean, it took about 2 seconds for people on social media to mock this totally staged, totally scripted phone call between the Obamas and Kamala. The least popular Democrat candidate just four years ago. She dropped out before Iowa. She got no votes, basically no delegates. She got as many delegates as I did. How about that? Zero. Nothing. And now look at the regime media. Just breathlessly going on and on about how she's now more popular than Barack Obama. It's unbelievable. And for his part, Obama, hasn't he lost the halo? I mean, people mocking him on X. People mocking the phone call. People talking about how cringy it is. How staged and how fake it is. It's perfect, isn't it? The guy in the regime media going on and on about how real it's about to get. And there's nothing but just an avalanche of fakery and phoniness and lies and deception. But, you know, that's what we're accustomed to. That's why you need this program. The phone call that reminded us of the one after Joe Biden, together with the dear leader, stole the election back in 2020. This is clip two.
We did it. We did it, Joe. You're going to be the next president of the United States.
We did it. We stole the election. Couldn't have done it without COVID. Couldn't have done it without the ballot harvesting. Couldn't have done it without 100 million mail-in ballots sent all over the country. We couldn't have done it without the dead people. We couldn't have done it without people, without the mules, without the drop boxes. But we did it, Joe. We did it. Here, another staged phone call. What is it with the phone calls? It seems like there, if speaking of real and organic, it seems like there's something just more off the cuff that would play a lot better. No wonder she didn't make it to Iowa. Nobody buys it. And then the fake president shows up, what was it, the other night, Wednesday night, to say he deserves four more years, but for the sake of the party, for the sake of the country, he's going to step aside. And then the regime media talking about him as if he's George Washington, when 2 seconds ago they were saying he's senile. What is going on? Phoniness and fakery. I think we read the clip or the blog post from Sundance earlier this week, the beatification of Kamala. He was right on this 3 days ago. He said, here's what you can expect. Here's what you can expect in the next 3 months. Little did he know that we were going to get it in 3 days' time. Listen to the regime media as they talk about Donald Trump. I mean, she is so, Kamala is now such a formidable foe that Trump is shaking in his boots. He's terrified. Clip three.
I think they're scared, Caitlin. I mean, this is classic. The team that is not ready to debate is the team that's worried, the team that may be losing, in fact. I think the Trump operation is absolutely confused at this point about what to do, and they can read the polling just like you. You're right. This is anybody's ballgame. That was not true a week ago.
Gone is the confidence. Remember Donald Trump sort of goading Biden into a debate? I'm ready for a debate. Let's do it right now, he said months before the actual debate. Gone is the discipline that Chris LaCivita had managed to hold Donald Trump to, you know, basically through the convention. That's all gone. So what you're seeing now is sort of a desperation, a panic, not really knowing how to handle her new entry into the race.
Trump doesn't know how to handle her. He's lost his confidence. She, you know, again, the fact that they would speak this confidently about Kamala tells you that they still are going to try to steal this. I told you the other day how laughable it would be if Joe Biden went from 81 million votes to something like 90 million or 95 million. Imagine if Kamala Harris somehow pulled in 90 million votes. It'd be perfect in the world of fakery. But if you just look at it, if you look at it and you look at policy and you look at images and you look at headlines, illegal immigrants coming into the country and killing and raping people, Americans. In that way, she's the perfect opponent for Donald Trump. Because all Donald Trump has to do is string together the disturbing video and then say, she was supposed to be the border czar. Do you know what the regime media has been saying all this week? She was never the border czar. She was never in charge of the border. What? They think we're so stupid that we can't even remember what happened 3 years ago. It was announced by the regime media. It was announced by Joe Biden. And what happened after that? Nothing. She never went to the border. She never did a thing about it. The policy has been wide open borders from the days of the Dear Leader. A little bit of an interruption there when Trump came into power. But aside from that, these are future Democrat voters. Leave the door open. She's not the border czar. Listen to the regime from just a couple years ago as they excitedly reported on the fact that, hey, this is Harris's big responsibility now. She's going to keep things under control at the southern border. Clip 5.
She was put in charge of the border.
Nope.
She was put in charge of reaching out to the South and Central American countries to stem the immigration.
She wasn't the border czar.
She was not actually the border czar.
She is not the border czar.
She was never the border czar.
She was not the border czar.
Let's be very clear. There was no border czar.
President Biden put his vice president, Kamala Harris, in charge of one of his administration's growing challenges. She is now the point person on immigration.
Vice President Harris is now the Biden administration's point person
to oversee his administration's efforts to stem the flow of migrants.
Kamala Harris, the point person on immigration.
The point person in the effort to stop the flow of migrants.
And Kamala Harris will lead the response to the border challenge. Kamala Harris to lead the White House efforts to tackle migration challenges at the U.S.-Mexico border.
To take the lead on overseeing all of these efforts at the border.
Putting his vice president, Kamala Harris, in charge of this.
Her first big portfolio item.
To oversee solutions.
I have confidence that she's going to do a good job in this role. I think President Biden made a good decision, a wise move.
Wise move. Put Kamala over the border, they say back in 2021. And today, this week, just in the last few days, she was never the border czar. Why are they so sensitive? That seems to get under their skin a little bit. God's not going to let the issue of illegal immigration go away. You know, it was actually the immigration chart that saved Donald Trump's life. It was a few other things together with that. I mean, above all of that, of course, it was God's hand in the trajectory of that bullet. The gust of wind or the breeze. And then, of course, the head tilt. And why did he tilt his head? Because there's Donald Trump looking at the immigration chart, showing the catastrophe at the southern border. And Kamala is responsible. She can't run from that. The regime media is going to try to give her all the cover that they can. But Trump has the receipts. Trump has the statistics. He has the charts. He has the video. He has the footage. And so they lie. How many fake narratives can you come up with in 1 week? This week, I mean, we've been away. We've been away at the campout for 3 days. So coming back, it was just kind of, we didn't follow the news quite as closely because we didn't have internet or anything out there. We had to go into town just to quickly look at the headlines. But just trying to process it this morning, it was just stunning to me. Okay, Kamala is going to be more popular than Obama. Got it. Joe Biden's now, he's now on par with George Washington. Got it. Kamala was never the czar of the border. She never presided over the border crisis. Okay, got it. Donald Trump is terrified. Donald Trump is terrified of Kamala Harris. Okay, got it. Oh, and Kamala is now she's way ahead in the polls. Got it. When does this end? These people, they are in derangement syndrome through and through. It's never going to go away. Lies and deceit. Here we are trying to navigate our way through what's true and what isn't true. I mean, to try to put down the memory hole what they were saying about Joe Biden just a week ago, it's stunning. And they say it all with a straight face, these people. She was the border czar, for sure. And then you look at Kamala and the fact that she really hasn't been visible until the last couple weeks. And then all the word salads and just the crazy things that she has said. Here's The Guardian. So uniquely her. Where did Kamala Harris's self-help speaking style come from? Now she's a genius, I guess. Now she's brilliant. You dig into the way that she, you know, rose up the ladder, politically speaking, it's a pretty disgusting look at what a human being is willing to do to get promoted. And then to be bragging about her drug usage, it's like Obama, I guess. Yeah, I used to smoke this or that or the other. And yeah, I love marijuana. I've actually consumed quite a lot of it. So uniquely her, the vice president blends a prosecutor's precision with pearls of wisdom. This is nauseating in some ways. Experts shed light on her language. Now her language is just beautiful. I mean, she's a poet and a scholar. Since becoming the presumptive nominee, Harris has invigorated the Democratic Party. It's not only that she's a much younger candidate than Biden, she also has a stump speech style that embraces metaphor and a new age vernacular not often heard in national politics. We've never seen anything like this. We haven't seen leadership like this since the Dear Leader. Well, but Joe Biden is George Washington, but leave that aside. He was a little old. Now we've got someone young. Now we've got someone eloquent. Now we've got someone who speaks with a self-help style. She's got precious pearls of wisdom. The people that write this, the only thing that would make it funnier is if it was written by like seven people, like they do at the New York Times so often. Clip 11, all the hype surrounding how wonderful Kamala is, clip 11.
But I think the sell job is hard. She's not Obama in 2008, but they're trying to make her into Obama, a female version.
Right. And President Obama wanted her to be like him when he kind of got behind her in 2020. But she did not make an impression on Democrat voters at that time. She got about as many electoral votes as I did in that primary, which is to say none. And then since she has been in this office, she is not distinguishing herself. At no point have people gotten the feeling that she is particularly competent. But now they're stuck and they have to use the propaganda press, which they have completely in their pocket, to try to heave her over the finish line.
Over the finish line. That's all that it's about. And you watch, too. I mean, she is going to stick to the script. That's something that Joe Biden had trouble doing. Or if he stuck to the script, it was too much. You know, he'd say pause or this or that as well. But she's going to stick to the script because she doesn't have a lot to offer outside of that. A lot of them don't. I mean, John Meacham, the historian, wrote the speech for Joe Biden's Oval Office address the other night. He's a historian. And I'm waiting. You know, you hear people talking about that speech saying, oh, this will go down in the history books. I think that's in one of our clips a little bit later. And Sam was joking this morning. I can't wait till John Meacham, who goes on to MSNBC regularly, comes out and says, you know, that speech, it's going to go into the history books. The speech he wrote. I mean, they all have speech writers. But that was not a great speech. It was a divisive speech, in fact. Donald Trump survived an assassination attempt not even 2 weeks ago. And it took them just a few days before they returned to their Trump is destroying democracy. If Trump gets back in, that's the end of America. Trump is a dictator. Trump is Hitler. They couldn't even hit the pause button on that for any more than 48 hours. He was assassinated, very nearly. And they get up in front of the cameras to say that if he gets in there, he might cause some violence. He might cause some division. Everything they accuse Donald Trump of, it's exactly what they're doing. That's how you know. That's how you know it. Just sit and wait and listen to them say what they say about Trump. And then you know, okay, they're doing that themselves. Got it. Is it going to work? Well, I'm sure they've got the steel machines in full motion. The Washington Examiner, it says, so much for the expected polling bump for the vice president. Or Vice President Kamala Harris, in three surveys since she became the presumptive Democratic nominee for president, Harris has failed to overtake former President Donald Trump as his campaign feared would happen. Instead, the race remains where it has been for months, with Trump leading Harris both in new national head-to-head and battleground state surveys. Listen to this one. Just out is the latest Rasmussen Reports poll shared with the secrets and taken over the past 3 nights. It says it shows Trump leading Harris with likely voters 50 to 43%, well outside the margin of error. But that's not going to stop Joe Scarborough and company saying, hey, I'm sensing 2008 here. It's not something that, you know, conservatives should look at and just assume that it's going to be a landslide. We've got to be ready for anything to happen come November 5. Because look at what they did in 2020. How many millions and millions of votes did they manufacture? And then you look at what they're doing right now for Kamala Harris. They're manufacturing this political career. And at the same time, saying, "Not don't you dare dig up her past." That's for us to. When it's Trump, we can bring up anybody that's had any kind of accusation against him. See E. Jean Carroll from 30 years ago. Yeah, the incident happened in a department store right out in front of everybody. The celebrity, the apprentice star shows up, and evidently nobody saw or heard anything except E. Jean Carroll. Now we can dig that up and we can rub it in. We can take Trump to court for it. But don't you dare talk about Kamala Harris and the way she behaved and acted when she was back in San Francisco, when she was just trying to start her career, and the way that she catapulted up to the top. It's a swamp, isn't it? It is. God says the sickness, this is in Isaiah 1, it's from head to toe. I mean, it's right there at the head. It's right there in the D.C. swamp. And every time you learn more of the detail, you just think about Ezekiel. I mean, some of it you just want to turn away from and forget about it. But Ezekiel 8 says, come and see, look in this hole in the wall and see that there's even greater abominations here. Greater abominations. 50 to 43%. You think the regime media is going to be pointing to the Rasmussen poll? That's just a 1-point increase for Harris over Rasmussen's latest Biden-Trump head-to-head survey, taken shortly before Biden bowed out. So really, nothing really has changed. Except that the regime media, I mean, they are ecstatic. They finally got Biden's out of the way. He finally stepped aside. And of course, they were instrumental in bringing that about as well. These people think that they're God. I'll show you a segment here a little bit later. Just to contrast fantasy versus reality. And just the people that are out there. I started reading J.D. Vance's memoir. And it's, you know, it's kind of sad in one sense to hear about the life of the hillbillies in Kentucky or wherever else. The white trash, the rednecks, whatever you want to call them, the rampant poverty and now drug addiction that you add to it, that's been more of a development from the last decade or two. People addicted to drugs, to alcohol. People addicted to, you know, not working or government handouts. And he came out from that. And he went to Yale Law School. And now, of course, he's been a senator and he's Donald Trump's VP pick. And you look at the regime media, the way that they talk about him. They hate him. Not quite as much as Trump, but they hate him. And a lot of rhino Republicans hate him. Well, they say, oh, yeah, Glenn Youngkin would have been so much better for Trump. Nikki Haley, she would have been so much better than Trump. Haley, I saw a comment this morning where she said, I hope Trump sticks to the Constitution. I hope he obeys the law. She just spoke at his convention. These rhinos, just so weak. Here are these radical leftist Democrats are just shredding the Constitution. You can't even get a strongly worded statement from a rhino. They basically declared null and void the entirety of the Democrat primary. 14 million people voting for Joe Biden. 87% of the vote. That's canceled. And we're gonna install someone that didn't get one single vote in the primary. She didn't get one delegate in 2020. And we're going to tell you that, hey, democracy is working. They hate democracy. And of course, it's not even a democracy. It's a constitutional republic. It's a representative form of government based on the Constitution. They hate the Constitution. You've heard the dear leader before. He sees it as a negative thing, something that prevents the government from growing its power, from having more power over the people. Obama finally calls Kamala, and he says in his tweet, "Earlier this week, Michelle and I called our friend Kamala Harris." Notice how he puts "earlier this week" in there. You know, because it was starting to look pretty bad. We're five days on, and everybody's endorsed her except the dear leader and his wife. "Earlier this week, Michelle and I contacted Kamala." How much earlier? Was it just late last night? He wants to make it seem like it was as early in the week as possible because, well, Biden announced that he's stepping aside Sunday afternoon, and people were beginning to wonder after a few days, where was Obama going to weigh in on this? Listen to what he said when Joe Biden made his announcement to step aside. He says how that Biden's one of the most consequential presidents in history, and of course the regime media takes that and they run right away with it. "President Biden pointed us away from the 4 years of chaos, falsehood, and division that had characterized Donald Trump's administration." So he's there fomenting division and strife, the dear leader, and the regime media. Even John Meacham, when he's writing the Oval Office address, talks about how George Washington knew enough to know that we don't have a king in America. "This outstanding track record gave President Biden every right to run for re-election and finish the job he started." Sounds very similar to what Biden himself said. But then there's the big but. "But Joe understands better than anyone the stakes of this election, how everything he has fought for throughout his life and everything that the Democratic Party stands for will be at risk if we allow Donald Trump back in the White House." If we allow Donald Trump back in. See, they're going to do everything that they can, except through a democratic process where you actually let the people decide. They're going to do what they can, even if it's by an assassin's bullet, to prevent him from returning. Listen to this. "We will be navigating." This was his comment after Biden stepped aside. "We will be navigating uncharted waters in the days ahead, but I have extraordinary confidence that the leaders of our party will be able to create a process from which an outstanding nominee emerges." Well, what does that mean? Kamala's the vice president, but he's talking about creating a process out of which a nominee will emerge. And then what's been going on these past 5 days? lots of tug of war, you can be sure. As Obama, the dear leader, tried to create some kind of process. And then finally last night he calls Kamala and says, "Hey, we're 100% behind you. You're the strongest candidate we could have possibly hoped for." You know there's a little more to the story, don't you? Of course you do. I mentioned earlier this week about how Joe Biden, he announces he's going to step aside, and then 30 minutes later, he says, "Hey, I'm all behind Kamala." And it was Sundance who said that may have been, a shot at Obama. because then people got right in line behind the fake president, threw their support behind Kamala. And the dear leader, I mean, he was in a pretty difficult position. And then finally sends the message last night, or early this morning, I guess it was, and says, earlier this week, my wife and I had a chat with Kamala Harris. She's got our full support. So much fakery and phoniness. That Oval Office address from Joe Biden on Wednesday. Listen to the way the regime reacted to that speech, clip 10.
Take us inside the human side of this speech, as the president really gave anyone watching last night a sense that it's up to you, America. I've set out the vision for democracy to survive, and now it's time to pass the baton.
Mika, nowhere else on earth could a kid with a stutter from Scranton, Pennsylvania, and Claymont, Delaware, from modest beginnings, sit behind the resolute desk as President of the United States. And yet, here I am. That was Joseph R. Biden last night, the President of the United States. Does character in public life still matter? Well, I would submit that it does. And I would submit that last night you saw a portrait of character in the President of the United States. And now America has been given an object lesson in character and history by a man. Here I am, Joe Biden, behind the resolute desk, ceding power.
And that is strength, by the way, to those who misunderstand what that word means.
What we saw was magnanimity. What we saw was a quiet statesmanship. And he asked us this question. Do we still believe in honesty, decency, respect, freedom, justice, and democracy? That
I was struck, like all of you, by the somberness of the speech. Strong is willingly stepping aside, knowing that you can't win, and saying, I'm going to sacrifice my ambition for something larger. And I think in this case, that's what Biden decided to do.
Yeah, a powerful speech and a powerful moment in history. Right. He still believes he could run. He still believes he could win. He says his record and his ideas warrant a second term, but he is bowing to reality, and in a very selfless act. A selfless act, one that we should not overlook, relinquished political power.
I struck by the humility of that speech. And the words are beautiful. I wrote them down here and they struck me last night. But to be humble in service, that sort of servant leadership that Jesus talked about.
So he's up there now with Jesus as well. I'm struck by these words. I'm just going to read a few of them. They were written by one of our guests on this show, who comes on here frequently, the historian John Meacham, who put together the speech that will go down in history. These are some of the words from that Oval Office address. I've made it clear that I believe America is at an inflection point, one of those rare moments in history when the decisions we make now will determine our fate of the nation and the world for decades to come. America is going to have to choose between moving forward or backward, between hope and hate, between unity and division. That's what John Meacham thinks about this so-called inflection point. It's either hope or hate. What do you do if the other side wins? It's hate and division and the end of democracy. Well, take them out with a bullet if you have to. You've got it. I mean, the end justifies the means, right? We have to decide, do we still believe in honesty, decency, and respect, freedom, justice, and democracy, writes the historian. This is less than 2 weeks from when they tried to assassinate Donald Trump. And this is the kind of angry, divisive rhetoric that they come out with. I mean, speaking of the assassination, unbelievably, the New York Times and others are running with this story. They're trying to create a story out of the hoax that it wasn't really a bullet that hit Donald Trump's ear. It was shrapnel, maybe a piece of glass. And, we don't know a lot of details about his checkup in the hospital. So it could be, makes you think of Jim Comey. It could have happened. Did it happen? Do you have the evidence? Well, we don't necessarily have that yet, but it might have happened. I mean, it could be. These people that go on and on about there's no evidence, there's no evidence, there's no evidence. And then the New York Times, I didn't have time to check whether or not this was on the front page. Probably it was. Now we've got the bullet hoax. Now we're not so sure if it was actually a bullet. Now we can suggest that maybe Donald Trump sensationalized the story. How much longer before they're right on board with Joy Reid and Keith Olbermann that the entire assassination attempt was staged by Trump and his people? We're probably not too far removed from there. There's people that are already saying that. The New York Times writes, speculation swirls about what hit Trump. Swirls? There's really a lot of people that are wondering what hit him? I think from watching the video approximately 50 times, it's pretty obvious. The teleprompters are intact. They didn't shatter. They didn't send glass all over the place. Nobody else, from the looks of it, got injured by shrapnel. The death, the ear, the two people injured, they took bullets. Are they going to question the man that died because he got shot in the head? Are they going to suggest that maybe it wasn't really a bullet in that case? It's just Trump. If Trump says it was a bullet, we have to call it into question. It says an absence of medical records or official accounts has stirred confusion, but a Times video and trajectory analysis indicates a bullet, not debris, wounded the former president. So there it is, buried beneath the headline. The New York Times pretty much admitting, yeah, I guess it was a bullet. But hey, let's just tell you about speculation that's swirling. Why would it be swirling? Maybe you're causing it. Even the FBI director, I mean, I saw this in the car the other day and I was just shaking my head. It's disgusting. He's the one investigating what happened in Butler. This is what Chris Wray said in testimony the other day, clip 6.
I think with respect to former President Trump, there's some question about whether or not it's a bullet or shrapnel that hit his ear.
There's some question. You're the FBI director. You've been investigating this since the Saturday night that it happened, July 13th. So how many days? Do you mean to tell me the FBI, after, 14, 15 days, still doesn't know if it was actually a bullet? Wow. Trump released a statement following that comment from the FBI director. Chris Wray told Congress yesterday that he wasn't sure if I was hit by shrapnel, glass, or a bullet. It says, but he was sure that crooked Joe Biden was physically and cognitively uneventful. In other words, what Trump is alluding to here, they asked Wray, look, you interacted with Joe Biden. You're the FBI director. Did you see any cognitive decline? No. Chris Wray says, no. I mean, our exchanges were uneventful. I didn't notice anything at all. This is the same man who then says, I'm not sure it was actually a bullet. So he covers for Biden, obviously, and at the same time calls into question what really happened on July 13th. So there you go. Your FBI director. Again, another statement, just like with respect to Kim Cheadle, should have been fired the moment she stated, well, we had to keep agents off of the roof because it was kind of sloped. There was just a little bit of a tilt to it. Imagine the guys, storming Normandy Beach and the slope going up to those ridges that the Germans were embedded into. That's the head of Secret Service, whose responsibility is just one one responsibility to protect the subject, to prevent an incident like what we saw on July 13th, a total failure. And then, well, but I mean, the roof was sloped. And then here comes Chris Wray for his part. He's still the FBI director. He's out there suggesting that, well, maybe it wasn't a bullet after all. And you had a Sundance was on this earlier this week, the Secret Service coming out and saying basically, hey, no more outdoor rallies. That's what they're suggesting for Donald Trump. Again, more election interference. They're trying to cover up what actually happened on July 13, and now they're telling Trump, I'm not sure we, you know, I don't know if we have the people or the budget to actually protect you outside. So you got to go inside where the crowds are going to obviously be smaller. Sundance on these manufactured narratives. I just want to take you back. We read this earlier this week. But it says here, 16 years ago, the term manufactured enthusiasm took on an entire new meaning with the introduction of the one, Chicago Jesus, the bringer of all progressive enlightenment, Barack Obama. Folks, this is Sundance. This is his prediction. Folks, we are about to witness the full 2007-8 ego-driven madness packed into a short three-month period. The next few months are going to be ridiculous at a level beyond the Lightbringer. Packed into 3 months. If only Sundance would have known that it was going to actually be packed into 3 or 4 days. Yeah. Joe Biden is brilliant. Joe Biden sacrifices like George Washington and Jesus and Kamala Harris. She's going to be even more popular than the dear leader. And Donald Trump, well, he's terrified of Kamala. And now he's behind in the polls. And oh yeah, the bullet. It was just shrapnel. Maybe even just a little shard of glass. That's all happened this week. Fantasy. We had an article in the Trumpet. I don't know how much time I'll have to get to it, but it's titled Navigating Our Fake World. It's just from March of last year, 2023. You've got to navigate through this fake world for sure. I think it's an interesting contrast when you just look at, you know, the fake phone call, the fake president, the fake resume in the case of Kamala Harris, all these fake narratives. And then you just contrast it with Donald Trump, who, despite all of his faults, I mean, in so many ways, what you see is what you get. You may have seen, I mentioned earlier, but you may have seen him in the golf cart with that professional golfer, Trump just being who he is and not afraid of it. Nothing scripted, just speaking off the cuff like he does so often at the rallies. He was doing it when the bullet whizzed through his ear. Donald Trump spoke at Butler, Pennsylvania, just a few days before the last election, the one that they stole. So the speech on July 13th, that was actually a return to Butler. And Butler is very similar to the town that J.D. Vance grew up in, a hillbilly, where there was a lot of poverty, a lot of joblessness, a lot of drug addiction. Why did those people in Butler turn out by the tens of thousands to listen to Donald Trump, the billionaire real estate mogul? Why? What is it that connects with ordinary people like the ones living around Butler, a small town just a half hour or so north of Pittsburgh? We know about what happened on July 13th. But perhaps the most famous photo of a Trump rally in 2020, 4 years ago, it was taken at Butler, where I think an estimated 50 or 60,000 people turned out to hear Donald Trump. Tucker Carlson had a segment on this back when he was at Fox News, and he said this, clip 7.
We want to begin a different way. We want to begin this show with a single image. Now, the image doesn't tell you who's going to win or lose tomorrow. Instead, it's a metaphor for the election itself and for the moment that we're living in and will continue to live in. The picture is from a town called Butler, Pennsylvania. It's 35 miles north of Pittsburgh. The president held a rally there over the weekend. Butler's like a lot of places you'll find in this country once you head inland from the coasts. It's a former industrial town. They made Pullman rail cars there for many years. But it's been losing population for decades. There's still a lot of nice people in Butler. For 60 grand, you can buy a decent house there. It's a place you might be happy in. But our professional class is not impressed by Butler. They don't consider Butler, Pennsylvania, or places like it, the future. To them, places like Butler are embarrassing relics of a past best forgotten. The men of Butler may have built this country, and they did, but they mean nothing to our leaders now. You can be certain of that because when large numbers of people in Butler started killing themselves with narcotics, no one in Washington or New York or Los Angeles said a word about it. And so it continued. There have now been so many opioid deaths in Butler that a few years ago, residents built an overdose memorial in the middle of town. MSNBC didn't cover that.
People who helped built, who helped build the country, now suffering as, you know, so much of the industry moves over to China or wherever. And Donald Trump came along promising to bring those jobs back. He came along and, you know, listened to these people. The professional class, you know, not so much. Not so impressed with Butler or other cities like Butler across the United States. Tucker went on to explain why tens of millions of Americans just absolutely love Donald Trump. This is clip 8.
So given all of that, it was interesting how the people around Butler feel about Donald Trump. Here are the pictures of the president's rally there on Saturday night. Tens of thousands of people came. So many people that the crowd obscured the horizon. It looked like a visit from the Pope. When was the last time a political speech drew that many people? Well, the media didn't ask. Instead, they attacked the rally as a super spreader event. Trump endangers thousands in Pennsylvania. Okay, we'll leave the epidemiology to CNN. But the question still hung in the air. Why did all those people come? Why? They must have known that Donald Trump is the most evil man who's ever lived. They've heard that every day for 5 years. They know that people who support Donald Trump are also evil. They're bigots, they're morons, they're racist cult members. They know that Americans have been fired from their jobs for supporting Donald Trump. Not to mention kicked off social media, belittled by their kids' teachers, shunned by decent society. Only losers and freaks support Donald Trump. People in Butler knew all of that. But on Saturday, they went to the Donald Trump rally anyway. Why exactly did they do that? We should be pondering that question deeply as we watch tomorrow's returns and as we live through the aftermath of them.
This is exactly what you don't see with all these fake and phony narratives created by the regime. There's no deep pondering of why 50, 60,000 people should turn out. You go on and on about democracy. Maybe we should think about this. Why does the message resonate with these people? Well, the truth of it is they're ignored by the professional class because they're the deplorables. They're the danger to America. They represent an existential threat to the ruling class, the elites. And so Scarborough and company, they ignore these people. They ignore the question of pondering why so many should turn out. And they did again in just 2 weeks ago, that day that Donald Trump survived an assassin's bullet. Look finally at the last bit from that Tucker segment, clip 9.
They love Donald Trump because no one else loves them. The country they built, the country their ancestors fought for over hundreds of years, has left them to die in their unfashionable little towns, mocked and despised by the sneering half-wits with finance degrees but no actual skills who seem to run everything all of a sudden. Whatever Donald Trump's faults, he is better than the rest of the people in charge. At least he doesn't hate them for their weakness. Donald Trump, in other words, is and has always been a living indictment of the people who run this country.
That aligns perfectly with what my father writes in America Under Attack. He exposes, he's a living indictment of the people who run the country. He exposes the ruling class for all their corruption, for all their lawlessness, for all the treason. They love him because he loves them. No one else does. That article, Navigating Our Fake World, it's in the March 2023 Trumpet magazine. You can get to that at thetrumpet.com. And you can also order it if you call our 800 number and just ask our operator for a free one-year subscription, 1-866-930-3024. In that article at The Trumpet, we take you through some familiar scriptures, Revelation 12 and verse 9, where it says Satan has deceived the whole world, and how that in John 8 and verse 44, it says that the devil is the father of lies and murder. He's the one behind murder or assassination attempts. The devil is. He's the prince of the power of the air. It's a great article. As I say, it's there at thetrumpet.com if you'd like to subscribe. We want to leave 3 minutes for, we didn't have time for a promo, but we do have time for this week's installment of World Watch. We'll conclude today's show with that. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Thank you for joining us today and all week long, and we'll see you again next time.
Russia is building a space-based nuclear weapon that threatens the entire modern way of life. General Stephen Whiting, commander of United States Space Command, said on July 17th at the Aspen Security Forum. The director of the Defense Intelligence Agency also spoke at the forum, saying U.S. intelligence officials have been monitoring this Russian project for almost a decade and believe the Russians are getting close to launch. Russia and China are also developing ground-based anti-satellite weapons, as well as satellites that are maneuverable by operatives on the ground and equipped with robotic arms that can hijack, damage, or destroy other satellites. But the new space-based nuclear weapon is most alarming because of the massive amount of damage it could inflict. Some think fear of mutually assured destruction would prevent Russia and China from attacking U.S. satellites. But the reality is, America has far more satellites in orbit than any other nation and relies on them far more heavily. Of the 7,096 satellites in space, 4,723 are American. Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury has long called attention to the danger of the U.S. military's reliance on computer technologies that are susceptible to enemy attack. To learn more about the danger over-reliance on such technology poses to American security, read The Satellite Slayers from the April 2024 Trumpet. Israel spent the weekend defending itself on two fronts as it faced attacks from the Houthis in the south and Hezbollah in the north. On Friday, July 19th, Tel Aviv was hit by a Houthi drone strike, killing one person and injuring at least 10 others. The next day, Israel retaliated by striking the Yemeni port of Hodeidah, killing 6 and wounding at least 80 people, according to local medics. Israeli officials said the Houthis were receiving weapons shipments from Iran at the port. That same day, Hezbollah launched drones into the northern Golan Heights. Israel's interceptor missiles missed at least one drone, resulting in 2 soldiers of the Israel Defense Forces being wounded. On Sunday, July 20th, a missile was fired from Yemen toward Israel's resort city of Eilat, but was successfully intercepted. Hezbollah also fired rockets at Daphna in the northern Golan Heights and into western Galilee. Houthi spokesman Mohammed Abdul Salam told Al Jazeera TV that after this weekend, there will be no red lines and that even sensitive institutions would be targeted. Since Hamas attacked Israel on October 7th, militant groups from surrounding nations like Lebanon, Yemen, Syria, and Iraq have joined the conflict in support of Palestine. Meanwhile, the world denies Israel's right to defend itself against these attacks. To learn more about the history of the Holy Land and what is prophesied to happen in Israel's future, read our free booklet, Jerusalem in Prophecy. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.